The Plan B residencies used to be like a luxurious option for the rich and wealthy. Now it's becoming a must-have insurance policy.
Many people, they live in this mindset that, well, this is just the way it is. We're robbed by inflation, healthcare is expensive, there are long wait times, blah, blah, blah.
And I realized I'd been like a frog in a pot, just slowly being boiled and nearly to death. Luckily, I woke up and said, you know what, Adam, what would life be like if you didn't have to play this game anymore?
It comes down to the simple fact that in 2008, someone gave the system the middle finger and released something they can't control or touch, which is Bitcoin. Since that moment, everything started to fall apart.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have not one, but two Bitcoin legends here with me. So Tony, as always, but we've got Mr. Adam Hudson of Unemployable Media. Adam, thank you so much for joining, man. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
It's my absolute pleasure, mate. Nice to be with you guys.
All righty. So we're going to spend a lot of time here talking about Plan B residencies. This is an incredibly popular service that we have right now. And I think a lot of people are curious to understand why people are doing this. What led them to these sorts of, what feel like in many cases, big decisions. So you are from Australia and you're sort of living an interesting life these days. Could you talk a bit about, was there like a particular moment where you said, I need a plan B. I need to either get out of here now or I need to have this backup capability at my disposal?
Yeah. So look, for me, you know, I turned 50 not too long ago, and I think you do a lot of thinking in life as you approach these milestones, but particularly 50, it's a big one. I've been in business for 30 years. And in Australia, there was kind of a bunch of things happening, a couple of different vectors to this story. And I think the first one was, the government in Australia was becoming far more aggressive and becoming a very leftist place. So people who make money were becoming sort of the enemy. And, you know, you saw it in taxation. You saw it with every single possible way that they could tax you, they would tax you. And in Australia, property, which is where a lot of my wealth was stored, has always been sort of a honeypot for the government. And they just keep increasing taxes on this asset of real estate. And the problem is you can't move it easily. We're all Bitcoiners here. And one of the most beautiful things, you know, about it is we can do exactly what, the old saying, go where you treat it best. If we want to move, we can, but with real estate, you can't. And one day I was sitting there in my home in the Gold Coast and I read an article about a new tax on real estate, which was a view tax. So if your apartment on the Gold Coast where I live was over level 4, then they were going to increase your rates. So that's an annual tax you get on your property in Australia. They're going to increase rates by 50%, your taxes on the property by 50% if you're over level 4. And then at the same time, they're bringing in this unrealized capital gains tax, which was basically taxing your retirement fund. If you're in Australia, if you've done the right thing, basically did a deal with the Australian population, said that if you put money into your retirement fund, we'll give you favorable tax when you put it in, but you can't touch it for like 30 or 40 years. And what's happened is over time, Australian people have done the right thing so that they don't become a burden on the populace or the government at the end. This has grown into, trillions of dollars of savings. And the government has said, you know what, there's all this money that's sitting over there that is there because people did what they incentivized them to do. And they said, we're going to start taxing you if you've got over $3 million now. Even if you haven't sold the assets in there, you're going to be forced to sell those assets to pay taxes on gains you haven't even made yet. And then on top of that, we have all these free speech issues coming in the country where, you know, we are losing our right to free speech in the country. So, I mean, all of this is happening together. And one day I was just sitting there and I'm just going, I got an email from my accountant. It was my tax bill, and attached to the tax bill was his invoice for doing my taxes. So I got a bill for the bill. And I'm at the end, I'm just going, well, this is crazy, right? Like, and all this stuff's happening at once. And I just sat there and said, I just can't do this anymore. And I realized I'd been like a frog in a pot, just slowly being boiled and nearly to death. Luckily, I woke up and said, you know what, Adam, what would life be like if you didn't have to play this game anymore? And that's when I seriously decided to look at what life would look like as I got over 50 and wanted to work less and wanted to live off what I'd spent 30 years acquiring. And I could see my largest expense in my life was my government. And then I decided it's time to make some changes. And I made the changes. I'd be happy to share the journey since I did.
Yeah, Tony, I would love to hear if you can follow up on that with, because you're probably the one with the front row seat to many of our clients who are making these transitions from, it seems to be a variety of countries, a lot of interest from Australia. I think for many of the reasons you've described here, I was unfamiliar with the view tax, which is as crazy as it sounds.
Dude.
But Tony, are there other things that you're hearing from clients that maybe would resonate with Adam?
I'll add just one more before Tony comes in, just to show you how insane this is. There's a spare bedroom tax on the table. So if you have a spare bedroom in your house, they want to start taxing that as well because we have an immigration problem. We have a housing shortage. So they're saying if you've got spare bedrooms that you're not using, they're going to tax you, which is basically to force people out of their own homes. Anyway, no wonder you're getting so many inquiries from Australia. Back to you, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, our number one and number two there, you know, side by side exodus locations are Australia and the UK for obvious reasons. What's happening is that people that are, you know, usually were accustomed to living, you know, in pretty much financially privileged countries are now starting to see the other side of the system, you know, like the truth behind what they thought was like a normal, you know, happy-go-lucky system, just the way they've been brainwashed to believe it is since the day they were born. And now we're starting to see serious contempt for exactly, as you mentioned, Adam, success. If you are a successful person, well, now you are all of a sudden like an enemy or like a bad, evil person in society that has to be punished. And so essentially, you know, the folks that you thought were, you know, there to, you know, serve and protect, well, now you're seeing their true colors, which is essentially, like I keep saying all the time, this is nothing more than organized crime. And depending on where you are in this world, you know, their systems are falling apart. They are failing. And they started to fail in 2008, when for the first time ever, there was an alternative, a viable, real alternative, money, which is what, you know, these parasites used to live on for free for, you know, centuries, essentially. Well, now 2008 came along, this thing called Bitcoin. And at first, of course, everybody ignored it. Nobody knew what it was, but it stayed and they attacked it and they tried to destroy it, but they failed, you know, one by one. And eventually this thing kept on growing to a point where it's become so exponentially decentralized and strong that everyone now is starting to pay attention. And the problem when everyone realizes that this is money, well, they also realize that the legacy system, that fiat nonsense, is now optional. And people are opting out. And when that happens, well, those parasites that have been accustomed to living for free now are scared. They're running desperate and they're looking for any solution to keep you stuck in their system so that they can continuously extract from you. In other words, steal. So this is where you start seeing all these creative and, you know, insane, you know, proposals like an unrealized capital gains tax, taxing, you know, spare bedrooms, you know, a view tax. You know, these are just as moronic as the WhatsApp tax in Lebanon. And you're going to keep on seeing these creative ideas because they have no idea what else to do. So they're going to throw anything and hopefully something sticks. Smart money is still in a position to flee. And this is where all these Plan B inquiries are coming from, is that people are tired of it. They see the writing on the wall. They are not going to, you know, walk into a slaughterhouse. They've drawn the line in the sand and they're out. And so more countries are going to follow suit. I mean, Australia and the UK right now are at the front of the line, but we see inquiries from Canada. We see a lot from the US. It's going to come from everywhere. And the countries not playing these shitty rules are going to become, you know, the new Monacos of the future. And I'm 100% convinced that this is what we're walking into. This is what I call the divided world, you know, the Elysium, where you're going to have a part of the world that's living, you know, like glorified kings and queens, and the drastic opposite on the other side, which is a complete shithole. This is what I think we're walking towards. So the Plan B residencies used to be like a luxurious option for the rich and wealthy. Now it's becoming a must-have insurance policy for anyone that wants to protect their financial future or themselves, like their dignified selves and their families.
Adam, I'd be curious to hear if, so I can imagine if you're someone with our mindset living in Australia, it's very easy to hear a view tax and to just recognize the evil for what it is. Is your impression that more and more people, like just, you know, normal everyday people who have historically trusted the government, are waking up to the insanity, or are people still just kind of shrugging their shoulders and going on with their day and saying, you know, oh, well, I don't have a, you know, a room on the fourth story of a building, so it doesn't affect me. Like, what's the vibe that you feel from other people in Australia?
Yeah, look, I'll try and answer that with the awareness that I am in we're all in our own echo chamber. So certainly in my echo chamber, people are outraged because that's the world I live in. But I do believe that Australians more broadly are seeing now and feeling now for the first time a deep sense of betrayal from their government. And really, I think COVID woke a lot of people up. They look back on that time and realize they were lied to and controlled and how soft and compliant they'd become. And so I think a lot of Australians, I'll only speak for them, are certainly waking up. And I think right now they definitely, after the inflation that was inevitable when they helicoptered money out of the sky and did what fiat scamming governments do, and all of us were like, inflation, anyone, you know, like we could see it crystal clear. And so Australians now for the first time are hurting. A lot of people don't realize Australia's a very wealthy country. The average net worth of Australian is nearly $1 million. It's a very wealthy country. But, you know, they're now feeling it as well. So I think in short, yes, they're definitely waking up. And they're starting to see that this system is wrong. But what they don't realize, and I want Australians particularly listening to this, they always say to me, Adam, it must be great now that your tax burden is so much lower. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, that is great. The fact that I'm no longer working till, you know, Thursday morning for the government, that's wonderful. But what's even better is the cognitive load. I didn't realize how much bandwidth was taken up trying to comply, right? Like literally, like structuring things and like thinking about Division 7A loans. Australians, I know what I'm talking about here, but all these complex things, trusts and distributions and all this stuff. And once you get the right structure and the right environment, that all just goes away. You know, like holding assets for, you know, over a year to get the capital gains tax discount and the intercompany loans and all this stuff. Just the cost of staying out of jail and mentally, right? And then when you actually move out to somewhere that actually wants you to be there and doesn't hate money, like doesn't hate wealthy people, like in Australia, this was another trigger point for me, Michael, was our big financial paper in Australia is called the Financial Review. Not long ago, it published an article saying that more than 50% of the Australian voter base now is reliant on the government for their principal source of income. Think about that. So what does that tell you? It tells you that we've crossed the Rubicon and we are now a socialist country, full-on socialist country, and you have the voting populace essentially standing next to the money printer because the politicians are just going to say, this is what we'll give you if you vote for us. So I just don't see any bright future when they see the rich as, you know, let's eat the rich. That's actually what's happening in Australia right now. And the smart rich are just going, we're out of here. Good luck. Hope you make it. And they're doing what every country before that has tried this and failed is happening now in Australia. The money's leaving.
That's crazy. So I'd be curious. So like in Canada, we talked about this on Bitcoin Banter months ago. I think we would all probably agree that voting harder isn't the solution. But you can probably vote more socialist or less socialist in a typical election. Is there any indication that folks in Australia are fed up to the point? Because like Canada went the opposite direction. You know, they went from Trudeau to a former two-time central banker as their prime minister. Is there any indication that Australia might be waking up to the extent that they will find someone with a little bit more common sense to, or do you think this is just a continuous downhill for the foreseeable future?
It's happening. Like there's a political leader in Australia called Pauline Hanson, who has been around for many, many years. And she's a bit like Tommy Robinson. They called her racist. They called her far right wing. They called her a Nazi, you know, all those things. Now, all of a sudden, her political party has doubled in support in the last 6 months. I don't know how long she's been in parliament, but I'm talking decades. So I think we're seeing a big swing there. But there is an indication that the mood is swinging, but the real vote is when you leave, like vote with your feet. And all of a sudden the tax receipts fall, but that's when they're going to start to really see. But unfortunately, Australia still needs to go through more pain. When I was in the UK just a few weeks ago, at the rally with Tommy Robinson, that's a country that's been through a lot more pain. And they are now at breaking point, and I think they're on the edge of revolution. But it's, you know, the politicians hate you. I mean, that's it. In Australia and the UK, they literally hate their followers. A few days ago, I was in Boracay in the Philippines, and I had a cigar with an Emirati. And I asked this Emirati guy, and I said to him, how would you describe your relationship with the government? Like, do you feel that the government has your best interests at heart as an Emirati? And he said something that made me nearly fall off my chair. He said, Adam, in the Emirates, the government treats us how a father who loves his children would be treated, like would treat his kids. And that's how we all feel. And I was like, what? He was like, that is the love we feel from our government. We get a free house. We get looked after. Everything they do is in the best interest of the Emirati people. And I was like, holy shit, I have never heard anything remotely like that out of the mouth of an Australian ever. And it just was shocking to me. And that, I shared a quick reel about it, went viral. But most Western countries are just so lost right now. And I think Tony's, you know, right at the forefront of telling people what to do, because he's been through max pain, you know, and that's the difference between Tony and the rest of the world.
Tony, I was going to say you've seen the worst of all of this, and we've been talking more and more internally and on Banter about things like digital IDs, CBDCs. I don't know where Australia's at on some of that stuff. I know the UK is pushing for
the world champions, mate.
okay, I haven't seen the headlines on that yet. But Tony, maybe if for people who are sitting there in a comfortable position, a relatively comfortable position, they don't think they're the frog boiling in water at the moment. How quickly do you think these sorts of topics, digital IDs, CBDCs, anything else, taxation, become a risk that forces action?
Well, the thing is, when you've walked in my shoes, you know, like I keep saying, my lens on the world changes completely. For me, there's no solution anymore when it comes to human beings. Like, there's no point voting left, right, up or down. Like, all of these people are complete garbage. The real solution will only manifest itself when you separate money from human beings. That is the only way the problems will finally get solved. Because as long as you have money in the hands of folks that can abuse it, they will. And this is what we've been lied to our whole lives. This is why you're seeing the world fall apart now. Because again, it comes down to the simple fact that in 2008, someone gave the system the middle finger and released something they can't control or touch, which is Bitcoin. Since that moment, everything started to fall apart. And it took 16, 17 years for it to get to a point where that falling apart is accelerating. And this is where you're starting to see these insane draconian measures to remain relevant. This is where the digital IDs come from. This is where the central bank digital currencies come from. All of these are desperate attempts to lock you in as fast as possible so that you have no way out. That's all this is. However, there's a growing number of folks that are paying attention, thankfully. Some of these people came through my shoes when their whole lives got blown up. Other people had the foresight and open-mindedness to listen to stories like mine and take the steps to protect themselves. Most people are nowhere near the proper message channels. Like, no, most people don't listen to us. They don't listen to proper education online. They're not on the right, following the right social media accounts. They're nowhere to be seen. They're living on a different galaxy, still struggling from one job to another, trying to juggle 17 different tasks, hoping to make ends meet. At some point, even that's not going to work anymore because it's just going to be too much. And when that happens, they're going to have two choices. Either they give in to the system, that UBI, central bank digital currency, or they go to war. There's no other way. Like, how are you going to fix this? If you're not in a position to opt out, secure your money in a currency that is outside the abuse, like no one can abuse it anymore. As long as you learn how to hold it yourself, it's yours. If you're not in that position, what other options do you have? There's only two. You either accept that you live a life of a donkey, or you go to war. I personally don't see any other way. I saw it in Lebanon, horror movie from hell. I don't see why Lebanon is going to be unique to that landscape. This is coming everywhere. So those that are still delusional, thinking they're sitting on millions and billions, living, for example, in the United States or in other financially comfortable for now countries, these folks are going to be hit the hardest. And there are already a strategy in motion, specifically with the United States, with regards to stable coins, which is, like, for me, it's crystal clear what they're trying to do. But for most folks, it's like they're cheering it on like a Christmas present. All the U.S. is trying to do is onboard $37 trillion of debt to every human being dumb enough to believe them worldwide. The problem is you've got these underdeveloped countries that are in desperate need of anything better than their shit currency, that they're going to jump on the next best shit currency, which is the global reserve, the US dollar, that stable coin. And it's being marketed. Look how easy, look how cheap, look how fast, send it peer-to-peer, you know, all these buzzwords. And those folks are going to adopt it because why not? Now their lives are better than their local, currency. Everything's fine. But what they don't realize is that every stable coin that's US-based is actually part of that $37 trillion debt. And when enough people are hungry enough for better money, right, because their local currency will have failed by then, because everybody wants the dollar. Everybody who still believes in the fiat system wants the dollar. They don't want their local garbage. They want the next best thing, which is the dollar. So at some point, 150 currencies around the world are going to fail because that stable coin now bypasses all governments and central banks worldwide, right? So these guys can't steal anymore. The people get the funds directly. But when these enough people adopt that U.S. stablecoin, whether it's USDT or whatever else that they call it, then what happens? That puts the U.S. in an incredibly powerful position to go flick, boom, everybody's locked into a central bank digital currency. This is what I think is going to happen. So essentially, they're going to rug pull the world. At least those who are not paying attention to this, who are cheering this on. You can use stable coins for the specific purpose that you need them for, but they're absolutely nothing you're going to put your life savings in thinking that, now you've made it. Because those are nothing more than the same system in digital format with an exponentially more sinister, capability. So that's where my lens is. That's why I see through all this bullshit. Like, you can't fool me anymore with your politics and, your marketing and your blah, 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 whatever it is. But most folks that have yet to, walk in my shoes are still wearing these rose-colored glasses where, the government will figure it out. No, we just have to vote left and right and up and down and things will work themselves out. So you have to get to a certain point of like deception, betrayal, and pain before, those rose-colored glasses of yours shatter. And you're finally, paying attention to what you're supposed to.
Yeah, that's well said.
I was just gonna add to that, and it's not just a case of getting the crap tokens out there, which is what Tony's highlighted beautifully there. The other vector that you have to cover off if you're the government is free speech, because it's very important that you shut people down who want to protest against this. And when you asked about censorship and all that stuff before, Australia is the first country in the world with the e-safety commission. I was just looking it up then. It comes in on December 10th this year in Australia, where everybody has to scan their face to access the internet. YouTube, social media, kids under 16 are not allowed to access YouTube, Instagram. All social media and YouTube is going to be banned to kids under 16 in Australia. But how do you age verify? Well, you have to scan everybody. How do you get that through? If you're a government, you pretend that you're protecting the children. With a straight face, they're not going to block porn sites. What they're doing is protecting the children from YouTube. I mean, it's laughable, right? It's an absolute joke. But of course, it's got nothing to do with protecting children. It's got to do with making sure that if you speak up against this, like Tony's doing right now, as an Australian, you will see exactly what they're doing right now in the UK, where they're arresting people for making tweets that they don't like. They're literally in their homes, putting them in handcuffs and taking them to jail. And you need that level of control coupled with a digital currency, which is the ultimate weaponization of money. When you are reliant on this digital token that they can say, well, Tony, you've been a bad boy because you made this Instagram post, so you can't spend your money in this place or that place, or we're debiting your account. You know, digital token technology in Australia that they're talking about, this CBDC stuff, it'll be money that can be spent in one state of the country, but not in another. It can be spent on one thing, but not another thing, that can be withheld for any reason whatsoever. And so what Tony's saying is, you know, you have to protect free speech laws and you have to self-custody, because if you don't have free speech laws, it's equally, and I could see this writing on the wall for Australia, because we're basically a surrogate of the UK. So it's really scary times. It's very dystopian what we're going into. And for those listening who don't understand what self-custody is and why, Tony and I were just recently in Kuala Lumpur, and I was on stage with two gold fanatics, and one of them sold gold and the other one stored gold for a living. And I said, listen, guys, let me ask you a question. If I have $10 million of gold in your vaults, before we talk about how much you're going to charge me to store it, but I'm guessing it's somewhere in the circa of 1% per year, like it is for in Australia, you know, which is effectively a wealth tax. But setting that aside, if I want to send $1 million worth of gold to my mate Tony here on table six, what have I got to do? Like, I've got to call you up, and then how long until I get a meeting, and when do I go to the vault, and what does it cost to have security on site, and how do I get it from your vault to Tony, and how long is that going to take, and what's it going to cost? And it was tens of thousands of dollars and weeks to actually get it transferred. I said, why would I do that? And I said, and importantly, if I get deemed to be a bad boy because of something that some arbitrary free speech law that the government now says it's offensive to say this or to say that, like in the UK, a guy got arrested that I was marching with because he yelled out, who the hell is Allah? That's what he yelled out. And he got arrested. He's in jail right now for 3 years. But if the government deems me to be a bad person and they call your gold vault and I KYC'd into your gold vault and they knock on the door and say, Adam's naughty, we know he's got gold in there, you're not allowed to give it to him, what are you going to do? Are you going to give me my gold if I turn up as a paying customer, or are you going to yield to the government? And they both said, we're going to yield to the government. And I said, exactly. And that's why everybody in this room needs to learn two words, self-custody. Go talk to my mate Tony at the Bitcoin Way over there, because you'll never be in this situation. You tell them to F off and they can't do anything about it. And so, you know, it's the ultimate anti-censorship money is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that is in gold is the next best option. To the extent that there is a second best, it's gold. And what you just highlighted is one massive, massive problem. If you have true wealth in gold, there's no reasonable way to store and secure that without all of the hassles, burdens, and exposure to government intervention that you've described. Okay, so hey, let's jump for the last 5-7 minutes here to Panama. So first of all, quick shout out to Tony. So while everyone else was talking about El Salvador is the Bitcoin capital of the world, blah, 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 the Bitcoin way. Tony, a year, 18 months ago, we started the Plan B residency in Panama. And I don't know, yeah, I think early on people were, what about El Salvador, right? Like, that's the Bitcoin place. Since then, of course, Panama has proven to be quite the safe haven. We've got the mayor of Panama City is a Bitcoiner. He's got a BitAx running in his office. They're accepting Bitcoin as payment for public services. It's a very freedom-oriented place. Many of the restrictions that seem normal to folks in the West, not happening in Panama. So Adam, I would love to hear what it is about Panama that's drawn you in, that you intend on making that one of your hubs.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, the biggest part of it is that the way that they treat people with money, right? They're not interested in taxing you to death. They want people there that bring economic value, that you know, have wealth, and they treat you like respectfully, not like a piggy bank to be pillaged from. And they respect freedom. And so, you know, I've spoken to many people, I've had many talks with Tony, and they don't overreach, in short, you know. And that's why I've ended up going to Panama. And of course, they're very Bitcoin friendly. The mayor wants people like me there. Whereas I feel like I'm actually hated in Australia. The majority of people have been sold the lie that the rich are evil, and the government certainly treats you punitively. So I don't want to be in a place where I'm not wanted and just seen as a check.
It's unfortunate that that's the level of propaganda we've reached to. Something I noticed, maybe that like a thread of consistency here, is that countries like Panama and even El Salvador, countries that operate to some degree on a dollar standard, whether they use the dollar or their currency is pegged to the dollar, they don't have the same bias toward intervention that a place like Australia, the UK, the US have, because they may have a money printer technically, but if they're pegging to something else, they're sort of at the whims of, you know, what the US government is doing. And so for them to want to welcome folks in like you, Adam, makes a lot of sense, because they don't have the button that they can just press and do whatever the hell they want, which I think is an important distinction here.
I think another thing that I just wanted to add quickly for Aussies and Americans listening to this, and Tony is so far down this road that I think sometimes it doesn't even occur to Tony, right? But the thing I hear a lot of the time is, aren't you worried about going to a country like Cyprus or Panama? I moved to Cyprus initially, and I have a tax base in Cyprus. And people say to me, didn't Cyprus give everybody a haircut, you know, like in the banking system in 2013? And I'm like, yes, that's true. But don't you, as an Australian, give up 45% of your income every year voluntarily? Like, they're like, oh, I've never really thought about that. But the other thing that just really boils people's noodle, it just doesn't even cross Tony's mind because he doesn't live in banks at all, is they go, Panama, how safe are the banks? I said, I don't give a flying F how safe they are, because I don't use banks. Like, I self-custody. So when you take that out as a consideration, really what you got to ask is, what are the hospitals like? What are the schools like? How safe it is? Those are the only questions, because when you become a Bitcoin and you realize the banks are just complete puppets of the government, then you know you live in the Bitcoin standard, then you don't worry about banks. I don't keep money in banks. Like, I don't keep money, let alone in a bank. So, but most people do. They keep fiat money in banks, and I just think that's the dumbest thing in the world to do. So I don't care about that whole aspect.
Yeah, and by the way, you touched on an important aspect of the sort of the equation that people need to run for themselves. So, like a cool example I've heard. So Patrick Hubert, he's the he runs Veritas Villages down in Panama. I heard a story from one of someone who he works with about he broke his leg or something in Panama, and no one has health insurance there. Like, you don't need health insurance. So pretty serious injury. He had to, you know, x-rays, MRIs, surgery, splint, you know, whatever he had. And I think it costs like $150, a few hundred bucks, something like that. No insurance coverage, got it all taken care of. The healthcare was great, clean hospital, everything he needed. And many people are, they live in this mindset that, well, this is just the way it is. We're robbed by inflation. Healthcare is expensive. There are long wait times, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is that is all just market manipulation, creating a problem for you and an enormous wealth opportunity for a small handful of people. In a free market like Panama, where you just go in and you get treated directly by someone who you're paying, all of that dissipates. Like, it just goes away, and you can actually have access to some of the best in the world. It's it really is a beautiful.
People have no idea, mate. They're in a, like in the Western Australia, they have these visions that everywhere outside of where they are is a third world bomb site. It's not. Like, it's not. I was in Cyprus and my friend cut her hand and we were in a hospital, private hospital like that. We were seen in 30 minutes, stitched up by a doctor from South Africa who was amazing. And everything was like 200 euro for the stitching, the bandaging, the no medical coverage at all, just 200 euro done. And like Panama's the same, right? Like, people have got to get out of their bubble and realize that, you know, like, America is like the only country in the world when Survivor came out where they'll give you $1 million for surviving on an island that millions of people actually live in. It's like, wake That's up amazing. And realize like the world's not as scary as what they're trying to make you believe.
So Tony, you have been on, I don't even know how many trips to Panama with onboarding clients into this. Why don't you, and Adam's going to experience this in a few months as he makes the same step. Why don't you explain, like, what do people experience when they go to Panama and how hard is it to get them to focus on the documentation and the work you need to get through because they're so distracted by all the fun that they can have there?
Well, the thing is, when people land in Panama or you even mention Panama to them, they automatically go into what I call Hollywood mode. You know, like, they've heard about Panama or they've seen a movie about it, and all they see is like whatever it is, like gangs and stories and, you know, all that fun stuff that Hollywood is so good at marketing. And then when you tell them, you know, that this was just an old movie that has nothing to do with real life, you know, of course, at first they're skeptical, but then, you know, they do their own research and you show it to them, you prove it to them, you tell them, hey, well, you know, we're there. So, I mean, if this was true, I wouldn't be there myself, right? Because to pick Panama initially took me like 8 to 9 months. Like, I had to leave Lebanon, and which is why, like, I literally tore apart every jurisdiction in the world to make sure that my next journey was not going to be at risk of another Lebanon. So believe me, I did my homework. And so to finalize on Panama is because it checked the most boxes. It's an extremely beautiful country. The quality of life here is very high. You know, the cost of living is not so high. They still stick to very old traditional values. You know, that whole family aspect, caring for one another, helping for one another is very prevalent here. I mean, it's just part of normal life. Like, for somebody who's not accustomed to seeing this might be taken aback as to how friendly someone is. They might think they have some ulterior motive. That's how weird and like backwards programming, you know, we've become when we don't live in such nice countries, right? And now, for the first time ever, these countries that were always shunned, you know, as third, fourth world countries, have a golden opportunity to go to the front of the line by embracing something the world has never seen, Bitcoin. And so they're going for it. They want to attract smart money. They want to attract the right type of crowd in order to boost their economies the proper way. They're not going to come after you and harass you. They're not going to overtax you. They don't care about you. As long as you're not breaking legitimate laws, they want you to help the economy, which, you know, of course you will be because you actually live there now. And so the incentives are way up there. And once you arrive, almost everyone that's arrived, you know, within 6 hours, you know, the first thing they say, well, you know, well, this was not what we were expecting. I'm like, well, what were you expecting? And they have no words other than, well, it's not that, right? And for all the carnivores out there, all it takes is for one steak dinner. And if everything else failed, you'd stay just because of the meat in Panama, right? Because what surprised me the most is even Americans were blown away by the quality of the meat in Panama. And I've always considered the States like number one beef country amongst other countries as well, but the US is always number one. And so when you have these reactions from hardcore carnivore Americans saying, no, no, this is better than back home. Holy shit, man. That says something, right? And so there's a lot of these little things. And of course, you know, we make it a point to help folks meet one another. So we're like front running this whole Bitcoin circular economies. We're bringing people together. We're helping them live close to one another. We're showing them where they can interact, where they can go, what activities they can do, you know, like how to build a real valuable quality life here in a country that they've never considered. And it doesn't take very long for them to realize, oh, you know what, why am I going back home? You know, forget this shithole. I'm out. So they go back home, they sell everything, and they come back and they start building their lives, you know, in a proper, you know, proper country that values them as human beings. You know, there's no threat to your sovereignty. There's no threat to your money. There's no threat to you. Your personal safety is not an issue here.
What's interesting, Tony, I found when you move is that, and you become an expat into a new country, is that the barrier to entry, having to have left where you came from and moved to a place like Panama, that qualifies you into a group of people who are serious about sovereignty and joy. And a lot of people, when they move from these developed Western countries where they were brainwashed into thinking they were in the luckiest peak countries, realized how most people in these countries are stressed out of their eyeballs, up to their eyeballs in debt, and they move to these other countries where they just don't live with those value systems. And you've just got people who are helping each other more. That I'm in Bali at the moment, some of the nicest people in the world, nowhere near as wealthy, but are just way happier. And all the foreigners that you meet here are all connecting because they've all made this leap to a new environment. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the tax benefits and the other things that somewhere like Panama does, but it's the same. I've been an expat several times. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life is move countries and meeting like guys like Coney and you and like, you know, you find your tribe and it's such an amazing thing. And Panama is just such a melting pot of entrepreneurs and freedom seekers and truth speakers. And like, it's incredible. So it's not just about the tax savings. You come alive in a way that is indescribable. You know, I could tell you stories of even just hanging with Tony in Athens in Greece and looking at the Parthenon on the top floor of a boutique hotel, sushi and cigars, and with Tony. These are memories I cherish that, you know, they're going to be on the highlight reel of when I leave this earth. Whereas most people are sitting brain dead with the same stuff happening over and over like Groundhog Day, and they're just dying, you know, like, get out and make a move. And best thing you'll ever do, and the agency you get back over your life, the bandwidth that's freed up, and this feeling, it's weird when you actually go a place where they want you there. You're not just abused, you know, like it's an amazing journey that goes far, far beyond tax savings. It brings you spiritually aligned and helps you find your tribe.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. It's really like you feel like such a heavy weight has been lifted off your chest once you're in full control of your life again. And this and everything you described, Adam, I just want to point out, this is not something that's reserved for the high net worth, ultra rich and famous. This is accessible to everybody, because once you're in full control of your money and you opt out of a system that is like ripping you off, you realize, you know, you have more of your wealth available to you. You're not giving it away to a bunch of parasites for no reason. That's why you feel suffocated and always poor and not able to afford anything. It's not because you're not rich. It's because you are giving it away to people that absolutely hate you and don't want to see you succeed. So once you opt out of that chessboard, then everything about you, your time and energy, remains with you 100%. And so all of a sudden, this is where that chest, that weight that comes off your chest comes in. And it's an incredibly empowering feeling. This is why I said it, like even on my last keynote, that self-custody, it changes the way you walk in this world. Like it literally does. It's the most empowering feeling you'll ever imagine, but you cannot understand it until you're walking these shoes. And so you're no longer asking for permission. So just think about that for a second. There's no more tax form to fill. There's no more bank asshole to speak to. There's no more, can you give me my money and answer 700 meaningless questions? There's none of that anymore. You are in full control of absolutely everything that matters, which is your money. The root of your life is that. Once you have it, everything unlocks. And so you just need to learn how to do this. And everything Adam just described is bang on. I mean, we can go on about this for months. But all it takes is for you to learn 7 steps and to start walking into that direction with baby steps. And everything unfolds magically, much quicker than you can possibly imagine.
And the fear too, right? Like, sorry, just I was just going to say the final thing, the fear as well, you know, like the fear of filling out your thing wrong, you know, like you get your tax bill, then you get your bill from the accountant, and then you live with the fear that something was done wrong and you're living under the threat of imprisonment and fines. And you don't realize this, but that's actually what you're living in. The only reason you're doing all this is because the men with the guns will come if you don't pay, right? And then you move into a system where that's not there anymore. It's just gone. And you don't know. It's like being in an awful relationship that you've been in for 30 years. And all one day you just go, you know what? Get out. I'm done. I'm claiming back my life, you crazy freaking psycho. Right? And then you're sitting 6 months later at the bar with your mate going, I can't believe I stayed in that shit show for 30 years. And now you're dating some super hot freaking new person who you're into and they're into you. And you're like, what the hell was I doing? You know, most people are dating a psychopathic freaking lunatic and it's been normalized.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that is a good way to wrap it up. And Adam, can't thank you enough for your time. It's always a joy and a pleasure to speak with you. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, follow you online, social media, whatever you've got to show?
Yeah. So basically Instagram, Adam Hudson Official. And my podcast is Unemployable Media. We've got a channel on YouTube. Thanks for having me, guys. I super appreciate it. And thank you for all that you've done for me and my clients. So many of them are going to the Bitcoin way for self-custody. Plenty of them are going to come your way for this stuff too, the plan B. And I'm documenting my whole journey with you guys, for those watching, from leaving, jumping on the plane, coming over and smoking a stogie with Tony when I celebrate my Panamanian status. Guys, just, you know, yeah, thanks for everything you do, because every touch point with your company has been absolutely amazing. I can't recommend you highly enough to anybody listening. Just freaking pull your wallet out and give yourself permission to be happy and be free. Stop talking yourself out of things that are good for you.
Love it, Adam.
Thank you very much, Adam. I appreciate those supportive words, man. And yeah, it's been an incredible journey. Very excited to see where the future leads. But I am extremely bullish on it, you know, with you, with everybody else, all these amazing folks, you know, that we're blessed to meet on this journey is absolutely like, wow, man, I couldn't have possibly imagined that the nightmare I lived through would put me, you know, here today. So I'm incredibly grateful and blessed for that. So thank you all. Thank you, everyone, for all of it.
Alrighty, guys. Thank you so much. We'll catch up soon, Adam. You guys take care. And until next time, stay safe. Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.